Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
As long as I continue to make everything look pretty and shiny on the outside, I didn't care how miserable and ugly I felt on the inside. I realized that I deserved a better me, so I can be the wife and the mom that I really wanted to be.
If you're ready to get real about addiction treatment, call Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
Welcome, my friends. Welcome back. We have a very, very special show today. I'm really excited about it. Joining me here is my pal, my compadre, Javier Haas. What's up, brother? How are you?
I am doing great, doing great. Very excited about this special edition of Benzinga's Cannabis Hour with our very, very special guest, Mr. Colin Hanks.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
Hey, welcome. Hey. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's Hanks Kerchiefs, or do you say Hanks Kerchiefs? How do you say it?
I like giving people the opportunity to say it however they want. You can say Hanks Kerchiefs or you can say Hanks Kerchiefs. Either one's good for me.
We love it. We love it. So I'm looking at the site. This looks really, really cool. Tell us more about this, man. Give us the quick story on how this came to be.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm always looking to try and do, you know, different creative things when I'm not wearing makeup, pretending to be other people for a living, which is technically the day job. And, you know, I was sitting around one day at a baseball game and sort of all of a sudden had that sort of lightning bolt idea of, wouldn't it be interesting if I started a handkerchief company? Handkerchiefs are something that I've always, you know, always had on me. It's been one of my sort of go-to never leave home without it type items for as long as I can remember. It's sort of wallet, keys, and a handkerchief on the table by the front door. So I thought that maybe that would be an interesting sort of creative outlet for me. So I started making some calls around some people I knew, you know, in the merchandising world and the clothing world, and sort of said, hey, I got this idea about doing, you know, a handkerchief company, because there's not like a well-established company that's known for making handkerchiefs or bandanas, as a lot of people call them. And I got enough people sort of saying that the idea was worthwhile that I thought I'd give it a shot.
Very cool.
Yeah. Super cool. You go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah. Why not? So, okay. So these look really cool. Yeah. And maybe if we can, in a second, we'll share screens, or I'll send you the link, Aaron, and you can bring it up here, but this is a really cool collection and I'm curious to learn more about it. You've got some named after some really cool parks: Grand Canyon, Yosemite, Joshua Tree, Rocky Mountain, right?
Yeah.
You've got these baseball bats, which I would definitely want to know more about. This is a really cool collection you got here.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, tell us more about crafting this and sort of the amalgamation of all this stuff.
Sure thing. Well, basically what it really all came down to is I wanted to be able to do something that sort of scratched my artistic itches, so to speak. And so really when the company kind of started, I wanted to try and just get my foot into the door and sort of establish a baseline of operations. And so our first round of kerchiefs were, you know, fabrics that I sort of picked out, and then, you know, picked out the border stitches. And so our classic kerchiefs, as we call them, that we have the Olivia, the Charlotte, the Samantha, all of those are our sort of first rounds. And those really sort of helped get our foot in the door. And then as things progressed, we started to be able to design our own kerchief, really actually do the graphic design and artwork and whatnot. And, you know, we had great success with those. The L Bear kerchief is probably one of our, celebrated. That's the ones that you actually see on the bats as mm-hmm. well. And, you know, as those sort of original designs sort of took off, we then started to partner with some really fun companies and doing collaborations. And so the bats that you see, that was a collaboration that we did with Pillbox Bat Co. out of Minnesota, which was a company that I discovered that just made cool bats. And so when we did our sort of farewell line to the Elbear design, we did 5 different Elbear kerchiefs. All the colorways were in the different teams of the California baseball teams, because California is a big part of the company and the brand. And so if you want to buy a bat too, you can do that as well. And then, you know, we did a collaboration with the Parks Project, which is a great company. Proceeds from every one of their sales goes to help benefit, you know, the U.S. National Parks system. And so I wanted to be able to try and do something with them as well. So we did a collaboration with them, celebrating a couple of different parks. And some of the ones that we have going on right now is our second collaboration, our second go around with them. So we're always trying to find like-minded companies that sort of, you know, not only have the same sort of belief systems that we do, but also are of interest to me. And, you know, parks and baseball parks, those are definitely two interests of mine. So I'm just always trying to work with rad people and rad businesses.
And talking, you know, about working with rad people and rad businesses, the reason why you're here today, you know, Cannabis Hour, beyond, of course, you being you, is you're announcing a collaboration with Jushi. That's a cannabis company that trades on the OTC under the ticker JUSHF. That's, again, JUSHF for investor friends. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing here? And because it's pretty unique, right? You'll be selling your products at their stores. How does that work?
Yeah, so basically, you know, when we launched Hank's Kerchiefs, it's an online business. You know, obviously, we don't necessarily have a storefront. We don't necessarily have the capital to be able to do something like that right out of the gate. And so we sort of got our bearings online over at hankskerchiefs.com. But, you know, about 6 years ago, I released the documentary that I directed about the rise and fall of Tower Records. And I spent, you know, good portion, about 7 years making that documentary. And I got to know a lot of people that worked at the company. And I really got to know its founder, Russ Solomon. And he influenced me and opened my eyes in a great many ways, not only about being, you know, just a curious individual and always asking people for their opinions and wanting to learn more about life and art and all sorts of stuff, but also wanting to learn more about business. And, you know, that definitely helped me get that film over the finish line for sure. And it definitely sparked my interest in starting Hank's Kerchiefs. But there's something inherent to the idea of a brick and mortar store in which everyone is welcome. No one is turned away. And, you know, a brick and mortar space in which you're able to find like-minded individuals and you're able to provide items that sort of fit a particular sort of lifestyle. And when I was having conversations with a friend of mine who's involved with Jushi and the Beyond Hello dispensaries, he was telling me about their ideas going forward in terms of creating spaces that weren't necessarily focused as just solely cannabis dispensaries, but actually spoke to a broader range of people and sold, you know, a broader range of items. And they said, you know, would you be interested in maybe doing the kerchiefs at our stores? And, you know, wanting to get my foot in the proverbial door in the brick and mortar space, it sort of seemed like a good opportunity. And, you know, once again, sort of being in the right place in the right time with the right attitude and, you know, linking up with the right kind of people, we were able to work something out. And so I'm really excited to be able to be launching with them and having our kerchiefs in their dispensaries in a couple of different states around the country.
Definitely. And for our younger viewers, I mean, I know Patrick remembers Tower Records. I'm too young to remember. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. But Colin and I were chatting the other day about, Tower Records and how the whole shopping retail experience was that an experience, right? You went to buy a record, but there were so many other things around it, just paraphernalia and all the bobbleheads for your favorite musicians and like just t-shirts and backpacks and everything to rock and, you know, at high school or wherever, right? And it, you know, what you're trying to accomplish here with Jushi makes me think of that same experience where you go for cannabis, but you go for a bunch of other stuff around it, right?
That, yeah, that I mean, lifestyle. That, yeah, I mean that's the vibe, as I like to say. I might need to come up with a little bit better phrase, but that's the vibe.
It works in this industry, my friend.
Well, I'm sure it does. Yeah, good vibes only, right? But you know, that is really sort of the thing that I'm constantly looking for when I'm thinking about businesses in which I'm going to spend the time and energy to actually go to a physical location. You know, and be there. I don't want to just run in, pick the thing that I want and then leave. I would much rather be able to try and find a way to be able to hang out for a while and maybe be turned on to some new things. I mean, that's something that I learned.
Order online, right? I mean, that's the whole point of online ordering. It's like, you just buy whatever you need fast. You get it delivered.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, well, I mean, this is the challenge, right? And this is something that we've been trying to do, you know, with the Hank's Kerchiefs website, is to be able to create a community around it. And so that it's not just this very quick exchange that you don't really think much about, but it actually become, you know, you actually become part of a group, so to speak, become part of a culture. And obviously cannabis culture has been around for a very long time. And so it made sense to be able to sort of parallel up to that. But you know, the fact that the Beyond Hello dispensaries were also looking for other sort of lifestyle items, so that if you came in, you know, specifically looking for cannabis or a specific kind of pen or whatever it may be, the fact that there would be other items there that weren't necessarily cannabis direct. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't necessarily, oh, well, here's a weed flag and here's a weed candle and here's, you know, the idea that there could be other things that fit within a lifestyle but weren't necessarily directly associated with cannabis culture. I thought that was really sort of interesting. And that sort of seemed to me the kind of environment that we would want to be in, you know. I've been really excited, you know, looking at a bunch of the stores and seeing how they're all coming together and the displays and all that sort of stuff. And I'm really excited to see, you know, how people respond to, you know, the kerchiefs being in the store. And, you know, in a strange way, it sort of makes me feel like Hank's Kerchief, even though we've been around for a few years and we're doing pretty good, it sort of makes us feel like we're even more of a real company, which is always nice.
So cool. Well, the thing that strikes me as interesting, and I'd love to get your take on this. I don't know if it was something you factored in the beginning of this relationship, but you know, cannabis is a community, right? This this industry specifically is a community, and not to take anything away from those people who like the weed flags and the weed candles and all that kind of thing.
No,
but it's almost one in the being a financial media company covering this space for several years now, it's been interesting to see the conversation around this industry elevated.
Yeah.
To more of a mainstream conversation, right?
Of course.
Real people with real jobs, with real lifestyles and brands other than weed flags and weed candles like cannabis and use cannabis, right? So it's interesting to see products like these when you go in the stores and you're looking at whatever your products are that you're potentially consuming and looking at, all right, what else fits my lifestyle here? You know, I think that's a really interesting addition to this industry.
Well, and it's, you know, it's a step that has been, it's been hinted at for a while, right? I mean, I think everything within the cannabis culture, you know, obviously it took a while for the mainstream to come to the cannabis culture, and the cannabis culture sort of came to the mainstream. They were able to sort of meet in the middle. And I think once a lot of the stigma around it sort of started to wear off, and you actually had, you know, soccer moms and businessmen who were able to feel comfortable going into dispensaries and not necessarily have that sort of stigma around it, then it really just became a question of, okay, well, what else can it be? You know, what else can these dispensaries be? Because if it's just selling one particular item, all right, you want to be able to sell that item very, very well, but you want to know what you want to be able to sell other items as well. Do you know what I mean? That's the whole purpose of a brick and mortar operation, is you want to be able to sell more than just one thing. You want to be able to sell things that, you know, have that connective tissue, but are maybe, you know, just adjacent or parallel to the items that it is that you're selling. And so the idea that you now have dispensaries that sort of refer to themselves as, you know, the Max, you know, the Apple stores of dispensaries or the Soho houses of dispensaries. I think that opens up a lot of opportunity, not only, you know, for the dispensaries to be able to sell sort of more merchandise and sort of expand their brand, expand their footprint, but it also gives smaller companies the opportunity to maybe, you know, get their product in front of people that maybe might not have discovered those items. Do you know what I mean? That maybe, you know, aren't necessarily aware of their website or their Instagram page or their Facebook page, whatever it may be. So, you know, the thing that I learned about Tower is, you know, the ideas, if you have a good idea and if it's worth exploring, you should give it a shot and you should trust the people that come to you with these ideas. And so when my friend Andreas came to me saying, you know, what about doing the, you know, the kerchiefs in the stores? And he told me, you know, what it was that he was doing. It just sort of seemed like a no-brainer. Do you know what I mean? And I think a lot of other companies and a lot of dispensaries are also having that, that idea at the same time.
Definitely. Now switching gears a little bit, I have like a random question and a quick follow-up, but do you remember the first job that you had that paid you good money?
That paid me good money?
I mean, not great money, not good money for the 40-year-old Colin, but back then.
I was very fortunate in that I spent a lot of time on movie sets when I was growing up. And so I, instead of just going to a work environment and sitting around and not doing anything, I sort of was of the mind of, well, maybe if I just make myself helpful, maybe someone will help, you know, give me a little money. So I would help work on craft service, organizing all the food trays and everything, and getting food and drinks out to, you know, crew members and cast members. And then eventually I worked my way up to, you know, being a set PA. So basically I was a little kid walking around, well, not a little kid, you know, teenager with a walkie-talkie trying to tell people like, all right, we're ready for you, Mr. Harris, things like that. And so those were the kind of jobs that I ended up first discovering, like, hey, you know, if you show up and you do the work and you do good work, not only could you maybe advance a little bit farther, but hey, the paychecks are pretty good too. So, nice. You know, when you're a kid, any job is great because then you don't have to ask anybody else for money. That's the best thing in the world. That, you know, that's a little bit of freedom right there.
What I wanted to ask you is, like, do you remember what you did with the money? What you did with that first paycheck, right? Did you spend it? Did you invest it?
Well, no, you know, if I'm being totally honest, I would go to record stores. You know, those were my candy shops. You know, if it wasn't, maybe making a late night run to Taco Bell and not, you know, being able to order as many, you know, tacos as I sort of felt I needed at that time, you know, that was about
moments.
The lap of luxury. You know, that was the luxury back then, back when my body could actually process those kinds of things. But really, it was record stores. That was really where I spent a majority of my money buying CDs and tapes and whatnot.
And
very cool.
Did you ever start investing? Like, do you remember when you first started making your money work?
Like, I would kind of build it up. I mean, look, I'll be honest. I've been very late to the investing game because I don't know if it's something about just my anti-gambling approach. You know, gambling is just not something that has ever appealed to me in the slightest. It's not very fun. And because, you know, my primary job is wearing makeup and pretending to be other people for a living, math is not necessarily a super strong suit of mine, although I've gotten better as I've gotten older. And so it's taken me a while to look at investing as something that I can actually do. But to be quite honest, you know, I started Hank's Kerchiefs all on my own. You know, we don't necessarily have any investors. My name's on it. I own it outright. And that has pretty much been my investment, really, to be quite honest. I mean, I have investments here and there, but really, I sort of feel like it's so much more fun if you're actually able to actually put the blood, sweat, and some equity into some of the things that you're doing. You know, it's a lot like showing up and realizing, well, maybe if I do a little work, I can make a little money on as well, as opposed to just sitting around and doing nothing. And so my investment is really sort of in Hank's kerchiefs, to be quite honest. I know it's a cheesy answer, but you know.
No, I think it's great.
Sometimes actually, cheesy is true.
Yeah, it works. It actually leads me to the next question. And as I'm asking this question, Aaron, if you'll share the screen, I'd love to just show our audience some of these products while we're rolling through here. So do us a favor and scroll through. They look great. This is really cool stuff, especially the park stuff. If you can hover over, I wonder if it zooms. So cool.
Yeah.
But I think so
basically,
go ahead.
No.
You go first, and then I'll come in with my response to what you just said.
Yeah. Well, so basically, one of the things that we really wanted to do is we just wanted to be able to show that, you know, not only are Hank's, you know, our kerchiefs, and specifically Hank's kerchiefs, not only are they great utility items, as I like to call them, they can be very helpful in times of need, but they can also be, you know, pieces of art if you want, they can be fashion accessories, they can be sort of any number of things. And so we've always tried to do things that spoke to a sort of aesthetic that we have. You know, I was born and raised in California. I had family that lived in Sacramento. I had family that lived in Los Angeles. So California has always been, a big part of my upbringing. And so that's why the El Bear kerchief is sort of representative of California. You got the bear, you got this state flower, the state tree, all those sorts of things. And then, you know, the Parks Project, that collaboration came about because a very good friend of mine who started Parks Project, you know, I took a look at some of his bandanas and said, hey, you guys need to make better bandanas and you should call them kerchiefs and we should do something together. And they agreed. And that was a way to be able to sort of celebrate, you know, one of my interests, which is, you know, trying to go out to as many of the, you know, less national parks as I can. Although I pretty much always end up going to that one, which is Yosemite, because it's closest. But, you know, the idea of being able to do something creative, come up with a concept, a theory, a design, talk with an artist, really work on sort of the graphics package and trying to create something that maybe becomes someone's favorite, you know, article of clothing. I thought that was a fun creative endeavor. And, you know, the big thing with kerchiefs, especially for me, but with a lot of people, is they end up becoming incredibly personal items. You know, I've spoken to many people that, you know, they always say, oh, you know, my grandfather always used a kerchief, or my dad always used a kerchief. And I remember when I had, I was having a conversation with somebody right when we had started to put, you know, started to actually manufacture the kerchiefs, but we hadn't quite launched yet. And she was asking me about the business. And she says, you know, it's so interesting that you mentioned this because, you know, her father had just passed away a few months prior. And one of the most important items that she found cleaning out his house was his handkerchief, which still smelled like him. And so she has it in a plastic, you know, Ziploc bag that she carries with him. And it's a little bit of him that she's able to carry on, that not only is a physical representation, but of course the almighty, you know, smell memory of, you know, of her father. Yeah. And, you know, hearing those kinds of stories, it made me realize that these items, you know, they're not just some piece of cloth. I mean, they can be, you know, for some people, the same way music is just the thing that is playing in the elevator on their way to the dentist or whatever, or, you know, the thing that they're forced to listen to when they're on hold. But, you know, they can always be so much more. And so, you know, those little things combined with, you know, weirdly, ironically, and you can also say, unfortunately, the idea of, you know, the pandemic happening and all of a sudden people, you know, needing to wear masks and, you know, us being able to say, well, you know, you can use kerchief as a mask, and that leading to, you know, the collaboration that we had with Dean making the leather cinches to make, you know, mask wearing a little bit easier on people with kerchiefs. You know, all of these uses, they end up becoming so much more than just a square piece of cloth. And that to me, I think is, one of the things I love about the item. It's one of the reasons why I've always had one. And I think it's important in business. You always want to be able to try and turn people on to new things and change people's perspectives about stuff. You know, and people have been doing that with cannabis for years. And so we've been trying to do that with kerchiefs, and hopefully, maybe if we play our cards right, become the Netflix of kerchiefs or the Q-tips of kerchiefs. I don't know. We're gonna try. We got the name for it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Well, I love that. You know, you've taken something, and it's. I would imagine some people might look at, you know, a traditional white handkerchief as old fashioned, seeing your grandfather mm-hmm. use it, right? But yeah. It's imbued with such value, given the personal nature of it, and especially what you've done in incorporating some of these cool designs and mm-hmm. the park project thing, I think is really cool. But you know, I'm curious. It seems like you're a builder, right? And Benzinga is big on building, right? We're all mm-hmm. our CEO likes to use the word craftsman here instead yeah. of employee or team member, right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's big in our culture to constantly experiment, to constantly push the envelope and really build something, care enough about it that you want to see it grow. It's clear to me that the same could be said of you. And I wonder, what was the hardest part about launching this? Mm-hmm. What was the most difficult spot you might have been in when you're like, holy crap, I'm launching my own company here.
Yeah, you know? No, that's a very interesting question. I mean, I think if I had to be just speak generally, I think having to learn an entire new industry in your 40s is a challenge, especially sure. when your primary focus is make believe, essentially. So to sort of transition from acting and directing into a whole new industry that has a whole different set of terms, that has a whole different, basically, I mean, it's just completely different. It could not be more the, I got into acting to get away from business. You know what I mean? Like the idea of like actually being in charge. I joined the circus for a reason. So the idea of having to learn an entire new industry has definitely been a challenge. But the thing that Russ Solomon really impressed upon me while I was getting to know him was that idea of never letting your curiosity die, and to always ask questions and to always be curious of everybody and of all the things that they do. And because of my creative nature, I enjoyed the idea of looking at a business as an opportunity to tell a story, as an opportunity to sort of try and gather as many people around the proverbial fire and tell them this story of why kerchiefs are so interesting and the history of them, the fact that, you know, there was a time when Kleenex did not exist. Kleenex replaced kerchiefs because, you know, mm-hmm. like paper diapers. Those were a relatively new thing. So there's an interesting history there. There's obviously multiple uses for it. And so I enjoyed the challenge of trying to get a story across. So I enjoyed that idea and sort of creating an entity around the brand, you know, around California, around, you know, Be Ready. Yes, it's called Hank's Kerchiefs, but each kerchief is named after a different individual. So it's not just about me, but it's about, you know, it could be about anybody. I think ultimately the thing that surprised me the most is how effective that actually was. And so I learned very quickly one of the primary lessons about growing too fast and overextending and sort of getting out ahead of your skis. And so that was a steep learning curve, you know, trying to learn an entire new industry while also trying not to expand too fast and having, you know, what the astronauts used to call is go fever, just go, go, go. Like, come on, we've got a place we got to go to. So, you know, those kinds of challenges, again, I really leaned on, you know, something that I learned from Russ, which was, you know, Russ was adamant that he didn't have all the answers. He didn't know all, you know, he didn't have the all-seeing eye. He didn't know how everything was supposed to work. Really, what he knew was you got to collect a group of people that know what they're doing, that have their strong suits, and then you got to trust them and you got to let them go. And you can be the deciding voice as to whether or not you do whatever it is they bring to you. But always listen to, you know, the team that you have and try and surround yourself with the best people. And I've been really lucky in being able to take a lot of the stuff that Russ sort of, you know, a lot of the stuff that Russ did well. And yes, the stores did close and they did go bankrupt, but there was a lot of different, different components to that. But a lot of the things that he did well that really made the company special, and I think came out in the stores as well as the sort of the vibe of those stores, that's the kind of stuff that I've tried to, tried to have with the kerchiefs. And I think we've been doing a good job so far.
You have. I have one last question.
I
don't know how much Patrick will love this one, but by training, Patrick is an actor. He did work as an actor for many years before succumbing.
He outed me, Colin. He outed me.
Buddy, I'm
sorry. Capitalism, you know?
Very, very common. Very common, unfortunately. Yeah, go ahead.
You've shared your advice on how to succeed, starting in the entertainment business, A little bit about your experience as a director. Do you have any advice for people looking to make it in Hollywood as actors?
Oh, well, really it's about patience and drive. I think really at the end of the day, it is an incredibly difficult business. I don't want to pretend that I have it all figured out. I don't want to pretend that it's all easy for me. It's still incredibly difficult. I mean, even before the pandemic and the entire business, essentially closing down for the year, I spent a better part of the year unemployed looking for a job. You know, now obviously that unemployment is a little bit different than others. You know, I totally acknowledge that fact. But it still doesn't change the fact that I still have to audition for almost every single job I have. I still have to prove myself every single time I go out. I still have to work hard. I have to show up every day, you know, at sometimes 5:30 in the morning with all of my lines memorized, hit my marks and try and do everything as quick as you can. I mean, it is a job. It is a business. It's not necessarily just the, you know, wearing makeup and make-believe, as I like to say that it is. And that's when you're lucky enough to work. But unfortunately, a big part of being an actor is trying to find work. That's the other big part of the job. And that's the part of the job that they actually don't pay you for. And that can be very challenging. And that can be very demoralizing at times. And, you know, talk with any actor. We've all been there. We've all gone through those moments. Whether you want to admit it or not, everyone's kind of gone through it. And it can be hard and it can be challenging. And so really, you just got to always have patience and trust, you know, as it is now popular to say, you know, trust the system, believe in the system, believe the process, and, you know, hope that if you're still able to bring everything you can to each audition and try and do, you know, your best and prepare as much as you can and work hard, that, you know, hopefully you'll be rewarded for that work. It won't always happen. You know, and that's the real unfortunate thing is sometimes you lose jobs because you're not tall enough or you're too tall or you got brown hair instead of blonde hair and they really don't want to pay for a wig and they really don't want you to dye your hair because they can just hire a blonde person instead. You know, these kinds of things happen all the time. And so you just got to be able to roll with the punches and hopefully be patient, you know. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes life gets in the way. And it doesn't allow you, the ability to be able to do that. And so sometimes you gotta, I don't like to call it jump ship, but you just go to a different ship. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to jump ship into the water, but you just gotta go, you know, go onto another ship. And I know a lot of people that have done that. You know, I've been doing this long enough now that, you know, there are people that I started out with that aren't, you know, that aren't acting anymore. And they're just as happy as, you know, if not more so than they were when they were actors. So. You know, sometimes
you're singing
you
this song, Colin.
Sometimes the circus, you know, it's really fun, and sometimes it really sucks, and sometimes it's better to not be in the circus. So it just sort of depends.
You know, I'll close this with this because I just you're here, I might as well. About a decade ago, I met your dad. I was finishing up.
Does he owe you money?
He does, and I want my money, damn it. So I was finished up my master's in acting. In San Francisco, and Paul Newman had just passed, and and your dad was in town to do a reading of Hemingway short stories, the Nick Evans short stories.
Oh yeah,
with a ton of A-listers, my class and I, there were about 10 of us actors walking down the hall, just really short persons in front of us. And we're like, what's going on? And it was Danny DeVito. And there's Julia Roberts and there's Rita Wilson and Tom Hanks. And, you know, we're sitting out in the auditorium. We're watching all these guys go through their paces. Jack Nicholson rolls in with a stained white t-shirt, his lapel mic dangling by his feet, sits down, starts reading the script with literally no energy. You can't hear him five rows back in the theater. Right. And,
he probably indulged in a little too much cannabis.
I'm sure he did. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. So your dad, Tom Hanks, gets up, he walks over to him, pats him on the back ever so gently, gives him his mic, and Jack did not even notice. He just kept rolling, just kept going, right? And so afterwards, your dad said something to us, and I'll never forget it, right? Just one of those moments, right? And he was like, oh, you guys are actors, you're studying to be actors, and we're all like, yeah, please give us your wisdom. Tell us everything. Yeah. And he's just like, just work hard and have fun. That was it. That's how he left it. So I will end with this. Are you working hard and listen? Are you having fun with this?
I am. Yeah, I really am. I try and be as grateful as I can for every day that I have, obviously, but I've been incredibly fortunate to be able to be coming out of this pandemic. And I got, you know, a bunch of different stoves, you know, hot plates going all at the same time. And it's exciting and it's busy and it can be maddening at times, but it's better than the alternative. And I'm very, very fortunate to be able to be doing two different things that that I love, which is, you know, the acting and directing and that creative side, as well as, you know, this whole new venture with the kerchiefs. And so, you know, one of the things that we say at Hank's Kerchiefs, it's the motto is, you know, you want to be ready, and mm-hmm. you know, you got to be ready. You got to be ready to show up. You got to be ready to work. You got to be ready to be in the right place in the right time in the right attitude. And if you do all those things, hopefully, you know, the gods will smile down upon you and you'll be able to do what it is that, you know, you feel like you're meant to do.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well said, man.
Hank's. Thank you so much. You can find Hank's Kerchiefs at hankskerchiefs.com. And of course, very soon at Yushi's Dispensaries Beyond. Hello.
Thank you, sir.
Sure thing, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for joining us.
This was really fun. I really appreciate the conversation. That was good.
You too, man. If you ever want to come to talk about your company and ventures at one of our conferences, feel free to reach out. Our team knows about it.
Well, is Will still on? Yeah, Will, we're coming his way. We'll be in New York in October. So
you should both join us.
Yeah.
Just saying.
That would be fun. That would be fun. I've never gone to a business conference before. That would be a new experience.
It's interesting, my friend.
I'm sure that's a great
I've set
way
you up. It's on the ball is in your court now, Mr. Lane.
All right. Yes. That's so awesome. Good. It was great talking to you. We really appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say it's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, Geico makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Caron. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Caron patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Caron. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.